Anna DeVlantis is here now with another edition of This Week in Chicago History. Anna, do you know that you and I are part of Chicago TV history? Did you realize this?
Oh, no. Yeah. What part of history are we?
Well, let me get this right here now. I believe we are the only anchor team in Chicago TV history to have both graduated from Chicago public high schools.
Wow.
Right? Was it Lane Tech? Did you go to Lane?
Lane Tech, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Roosevelt for me.
And Roosevelt. How about that, Bob?
That's right.
I didn't know that little tidbit.
That's right. If I didn't bring this up, who would? Let's talk about happier times for the Bears and what happened on this day or this week in 86.
Yeah, excuse me, Bob, the disaster of the Bears season we just came through. This will take us to the Wayback Files, and anybody who was in the Chicago metro area this week in 1986 will know the whole city was captivated by our Bears. This day, actually, Bob, this day was that playoff game, the championship game that launched the Bears into the Super Bowl. Playing at Soldier Field. I don't know. Were you there? The Rams game? Did you manage?
You know what?
To get to
I remember. I was actually on vacation, but I remember watching it on television from wherever I was. I think I was somewhere warm, and it was pretty windy and cold here, wasn't it?
30-mile-per-hour winds whipping through Soldier Field. The snow was falling. It was good bear weather, as they like to say. And the Bears, of course, produced a shutout against the Rams. I went back and watched some of it. Just remarkable to just see those Bears and remember what they were. And I dug up some audio here I think you'll appreciate. It's Pat Summerall and the late John Madden calling that game on CBS. This was at the very end of the game when it was clear the Bears were going to the Super Bowl, and their commentary here I think you'll enjoy.
They're starting their celebrations already. They got dances and songs, and these guys have every, you know, one thing I like about the Bears, they've had a lot of fun winning. They have records, and they have songs, and they have, you know, what do you call those things, videos. And,
right. The Super Bowl shuffle.
They've involved the fans. I mean, it's a whole big thing. Everyone's taking part in this deal.
This game, the NFC Championship, worth $18,000 for both teams. Dan Hampton looking on. And, of course, when they go to the Super Bowl, the winner gets $36,000. So it's not without its rewards, other than the acceptance and adoration of the fans. I mean, the place is still absolutely full.
Well, they've been waiting too long for this to leave. I mean, you don't wait all those years, all this time, and then finally get it and then leave early. They're going to stay. I mean, the players won't even want to leave the field.
That's going to be it. They'll play either Miami or New England. Whoever they play is going to have their hands full. 24-0, the Bears.
That's great to hear that again. I love John Madden saying, what do you call those things, videos?
Those newfangled things. What do we call them? Yeah, it's so funny. And then just to think the bonuses, I think, have gotten a little better in the NFL over the years from the numbers
yeah.
he cited there.
Slightly.
Still pretty cool.
And let's see. I remember a couple of blizzards around here, but we had a big one in 79 during this week of January, didn't we?
We sure did. The blizzard of 79, there was already a lot of snow on the ground when the blizzard hit on the 13th to the 14th. It shut down O'Hare for 4 days. You had someone, you know, the mayor lost an election over this. Mayor Belandic, of course, was perceived as doing just a bad job all around at clearing the snow and handling this crisis. Something else here, I dug up some Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson. They were sitting on the Channel News set for a special report, taking listeners or viewers' questions because they were so concerned about how things were being handled. They had the Streets and Sanitation Commissioner up there and other heads of departments across the city, and they were taking calls about what to do about the snow and how it was being handled. Here's a little audio from that.
It's hard to give these men questions about one specific alley or street, but listen to this one. And she signs her name, Miss Griffin. Are you aware that on last Saturday night, snow plows were cleaning the residential block of Alderman Wilson Frost and did not plow the streets right next to it?
No, I certainly was not aware of that. I do know that we were programmed for only arterial streets. Now, maybe somebody got a bit overambitious. I'm not aware of that. But certainly it was not programmed in that manner.
Bill Reitman of Portage Park asks, why hasn't the mayor called for the National Guard?
The National Guard is an artillery type. We are using National Guard, by the way, equipment. We've picked up several pieces of equipment from the National Guard today. But basically, they don't have the type of equipment that we need. Heavy, earth-moving types of equipment because of the type of snow and ice condition that we have here today. They basically don't have that type of equipment. That's what we need. Manpower, we don't need. We have a lot of manpower. We have some 1,200 people, manpower-wise, shoveling right now, today. But it's an equipment-intensive program, really, that we're in now.
Yeah, the streets in sand and the mayor in the hot seat. And that was also the time Michael Blandick was on the Channel 2 News at 10 saying everything's fine. Is that right, or am I confused about that?
No, no. Here was a part where he said, you know, if you get a 70% to 100% in school, you're still passing, because there was a CBS 2 news poll out that said that he scored so poorly, but I think it was like 70% in some columns. He said, well, I'm doing fine. That's enough. And you remember his plan to clear out the parking lots and have people move their cars to the parking lots so that the streets could be clean, but that just seemed like it just never got done to the level that it was supposed to, and he was criticized for that, and ultimately Jane Byrne, of course, mm-hmm. won the election.
So. Yep, and after that, snow became a big part of politics in Chicago, didn't it?
No question.
This week in Chicago history, we were reading Mike Royko's column, actually in two papers, weren't we, Anna?
So interesting, isn't it? Mike Royko, I know you have so much respect for him. I do, too. Legendary newspaper man, the best columnist, as far as I'm concerned, ever in the city of Chicago. And of course, he became syndicated. It's interesting because he spent a big part of his career at the Chicago Daily News starting in the 60s. He moved over to the Sun-Times when that paper folded. He won a Pulitzer Prize. But it was Rupert Murdoch taking over the Sun-Times that really did it for him, as you'll remember. Royko didn't like that sensationalistic tabloid style and was just going to bail. You remember he said that famous line, no self-respecting fish would be wrapped in a Murdoch paper. That's And he bolted for the Chicago Tribune. Interesting, as you point out, though, Bob, his first column was January 11th, 1984, but the Sun-Times refused to admit that he had jumped ship. So they continued reprinting his old columns, and people woke up every morning to the joy of dueling Royko columns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had forgotten about that part of it. You know, it's funny, over the years, I always wanted to have Mike Royko on various shows I was doing, and he never wanted anything to do with me. And then one time I played in a charity softball game with him, a 16-inch game, and after that, he was mm-hmm. my best buddy. That was the way to his heart, softball.
He was way into that, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Oh. And now, going way back in Chicago history, to the 20s, I've never heard this story about Marshall Field.
It's a great one.
This was a big scandal, wasn't it?
Huge scandal. It's the Women's Illinois Vigilance Society dispatched themselves to Marshall Fields. There was an art exhibit there, and apparently it featured some nude paintings. And they were very interested in this. They didn't think this was right to be displaying those kinds of paintings publicly. They went to Marshall Fields and they took down notes, and then they went to visit the police chief and reported back. Then, sure enough, officers showed up at Marshall Fields inspecting the nude paintings and taking notes themselves, and then they took the paintings down, Bob. They weren't allowed to display these kinds of paintings. Kind of interesting back in the day that was happening.
January 14th, 1927. Couldn't they cover up the private parts in the right. paintings with Frango mints or something?
Right, or do something. I don't know. I don't know how. Maybe they were offensive. I'm not sure. I just find it fascinating, too, that it would warrant a 911 call or a visit with the police chief. This kind of thing back then. Not sure that 911 would have too much time for a complaint like that these days, but that's how it was.
This week in Chicago history, Anna DeVlantis, and we'll chat about this stuff again next Wednesday morning. Thanks, Anna. Appreciate
it. Talk to you then, Bob.
Always good talking to you.